Welcome back to Hot Takes and Deep Dives, and I am here with two of your favorites. Together, we have done episodes centered around Madonna's deep cuts, her brother's tell-all, Life with My Sister Madonna. Stefan, we can finally reveal you as my anonymous source at the front lines who did all that background work on And Just Like That. So please welcome once again Tony and Stefan from MLVC, the Madonna podcast.
Oh, you say that so good, Jess.
Boy. Hey, everyone. I'm so happy to be back in the world of hot takes and deep dives. It's a world I love to live in.
And if you're And Just Like That heads, you gotta listen to Stefan's tell-all. Just look for like the And Just Like That episode where I interview a background actor, because it's literally Stefan from MLVC, the Madonna podcast.
I thought we said my name on the podcast, though. I didn't think that was supposed to be a secret.
Oh, well, you were freaked out about the whole...
I was. You sign NDAs and you never know what they're going to come after you for. I didn't know if I was like, I shouldn't, you know. It didn't prevent Us Weekly from running a story about what I said, you know. It's ridiculous. I'm very excited about it. I'm Just Like That season two, by the way. I know we're here to talk about Madonna, but I'm very excited that Aiden's coming back.
Well, okay. Oh, is that happening?
It hit the press the other day, yeah.
Yeah, it better be actually happening, because they've, you know, F me once, shame on me, F me twice. What is it? F me badly once, shame on you. F me badly twice, shame on me.
Now, Tony, your big life update is that you recently moved to San Francisco.
Yes, this is an exclusive on your show. I mean, I don't think I've announced it publicly. I mean, I haven't even done an Instagram post saying, hey, guys, I moved. But yeah, I moved to San Francisco July 8th, and I started working the week after that. Amazing. And I live 15 minutes away from work. I'm in Pacific Heights, you know. So yeah, everything's good right now, you know. I mean,
look at the view of that bay behind you and that bay window you've got, Tony. I mean, it's like, it's like Mrs. Doubtfire's house going on.
I mean, there are amazing views near my house, just not from my house, you know. No, I live two blocks away from Lafayette Park, which is at the top of this hill, and I can see everything. And a week after I moved here, I discovered it, and I was like, okay, this is why I moved, so I could be in the middle of just beauty and inspire myself to, you know, move on to bigger and better things.
Have you had any Madonna specific encounters in San Francisco?
I sure have. I've had a couple. So one day I was walking in North Beach, which is the Italian section, and there's a lot of vintage record stores and shops. I walked into a vintage store with my friend Brandy, and she's like, oh my God, it's a Girly Show tour shirt from Australia, very specific. And then we're looking through the racks, there's a Rebel Heart tank top, and I'm like, I need to go speak to the owner.
How did they have this stuff? You spoke to the owner?
Well, no, I was like, I need to go speak to the manager, you know? So I went and I told them, oh, and then on the way there, I see these True Blue album cover coasters, and there's a note on it, says like original Warner Brothers promo gift from 1985. And I'm like, okay, who is this man? And very, very nice guy. I hope to have him on our show. He, you know, owns a vintage store. He sources materials from all over the world. He's also a big Madonna fan. And anytime he finds a vintage Madonna item, he will feature it and sell it. And God love him, you know. And he started telling me a story of how he went to see Sandra back in LA in the early 90s. This must have been the Giving It Till It Hurts show. Mm-hmm. And he was sitting in the front row, and someone tapped him on the shoulder and says, sir, we have to clear these seats. We're going to put you in the row behind. We're sorry for the inconvenience. And in walks Madonna, Ingrid, Tony Ward, front row to see Sandra. This was obviously the beginning of the end, right?
Right.
That so is incredible.
I told this man, I was like, I'll be back and we're going to get coffee. And yeah, the other day, I mean, this is not a big event or anything, but I went to Amoeba Records and I bought Finally Enough Love, which, as I told Stefan, is momentous because I actually walked into a record store and I bought a Madonna piece of music. I don't remember the last time I did that.
But maybe we'll bring this back around, because I want to know, like, ultimately where you, like, we're going to center this conversation on her unreleased tracks, mm-hmm. but maybe the center of this episode, the question is really, would you have rather had this Finally Enough Love remix album or an album of actually mastered versions of these unreleased songs that we're going to talk about? So let's, like, save mm-hmm. that for, like, a conversation yeah. later, and, like, where you guys stand on unreleased songs. But Stefan, turning it to you, you just had a major get. Vincent Patterson, who directed and choreographed not only the Blonde Ambition tour from Madonna, but also the Bad tour from Michael Jackson.
Yeah, Vincent Patterson, I mean, when I was doing research to have him on the show, I was looking back at his career and I was like, oh my God, this man has done so many important things. I mean, not only for Michael Jackson, but, you know, for Madonna, I mean, he was doing, you know, he did the Express Yourself video. He did her Pepsi commercial. He did the Blonde Ambition tour. He did the Vogue VMA performance where she was all dressed up as Marie Antoinette. I mean, the Avidum film. He did Dancer in the Dark for Bjork. Like, there was so much that he's done that you're sort of like, oh my God, this is the man responsible for all of those. We couldn't show it on our Instagram, but he showed us a picture that he had took of Madonna on set at the Pepsi commercial. And it's never been seen by anyone. It's never been published anywhere. And it was this, not only just a gorgeous photo of Madonna at, you know, with that white stripe with the rest of the dark hair, but then it was just a beautiful photo in general. And I was like, he says he's selling it to a private collector, so he's never going to be able to publish it publicly. But I was like, we got to have a glimpse of it on the podcast. And I was like, oh my God, this is fantastic.
I thought it was funny how he said, when he was first introduced to Madonna, she said, I don't need a choreographer.
Because yeah. He was talking about when he was working with her on the Express Yourself video, and he said that Madonna started doing some moves that they had not discussed. And, you know, he pulled her aside and was like, Madonna, you've hired me for a reason. And I think what I had, you know, choreographed for you is much better than what you're doing right now. It makes you look sexier. And so she ended up doing it. So I think ultimately the takeaway from the Vincent Patterson episode and any of the episodes that we've sort of dealt with, that the people are in a creative process with Madonna, is that, you know, obviously Madonna is the driving force behind her brand, but it takes a lot of people to build an empire. And, you know, she's worked with a lot of amazing people who are extremely talented. And it's so wonderful to be able to talk to those people and hear their creative process.
I mean,
behind what they, you know, like what they were doing with her.
I would say if somebody like doesn't even know where to start with your show, I would say seek out any of the episodes with her backup dancers from Truth or Dare / Blonde Ambition. Like, those are amazing. But also the Donna DeLore and Nikki Harris interviews are just incredible. And I specifically haven't reached out to, if your show did not exist, they would actually be among the top of my list of people that I would want to speak to. But I'm not going to just do the same. Like, I am as interested in them as like some of the other people that I've interviewed. So I feel like that is, you know, I have other friends who have a podcast that like they interviewed. It's my friends Damien and Anne from, you might know her from, and they have what I consider the definitive interview with Tammy Lynn Michaels. And, yes, you know, married to Melissa Etheridge, was on Popular, worked with Ryan Murphy. And like, I feel like if I was ever going to direct somebody to the stellar interview, it would be your guys, Donna DeLore, Nikki Harris interview would be their interview on Tammy Lynn Michaels. So like, I feel that way. All right.
We didn't even talk about me roller skating with Madonna the other night.
Okay, fine.
Schmoozing with Madonna.
I know, right?
Okay, that. So here's
from Harlem to Rock 30 Rock.
Oh my God. Okay,
the Stephen Chmurecko story.
Here's my number one question. Do you think these recent appearances, will throw in like Harlem, the Pride appearance she did last year, and now this like roller disco event, are these worth going to? These types of events?
I will say the Harlem club appearance, I mean, it was super intimate and super small. That was worth its weight in gold. Like, I would have stood in line all afternoon to go see that, because it was her performing for, I guess, a good 30 minutes or so. And it was just her belting. I mean, it was siren song Madonna, you know,
singing. So was worth it because she actually performed.
Oh God. Yeah.
Versus these other appearances, she really just appears and you have the opportunity.
The Pride performance that she did this past summer probably would have been worthwhile to go see, because she was singing and dancing and looked amazing. The roller skating disco was just kind of like a cool event to be, but she didn't perform, which was, I mean, she was roller skating feet away from me, which was kind of fun to be like, oh, look, I'm roller skating with Madonna.
Were you allowed to take pictures?
Oh God, yeah. Go to my YouTube, the MLVC YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. It is like our number one. The comments alone are worthwhile to just go visit that video. But yeah, it's like, yeah, I think we were at like 65,000 views the other day on it.
Oh, wow.
It's crazy.
Is the title just Madonna Roller Skating?
Yeah, it's like, I was like, Madonna, finally enough love, roller disco New York. I love you that. Know, and it's,
all right, let's dive into these unreleased songs. I was inspired to do this based off my conversation with Edward Russell. I did a second episode with him a few months ago. And as part of that conversation, I was asking him, would he rather have a remix album or an unreleased songs album? And it was really because I feel very strongly that I would much rather have an album of songs that we've never heard before that are now like mastered and possibly re-recorded than an album. I'm just not a remix person. Actually, Tony, Melissa Etheridge's most recent album are all songs that she wrote for her first album. She has the demos and she went in and re-recorded them.
It makes me think really quickly. It makes me think of in the 90s when Barbara Streisand and also Diana Ross did these career retrospectives, and they put out box sets with alternate takes of songs, different versions of songs, just things from the vault. And, you know, this is like mid 90s. And I was thinking even then Madonna could have done something like that.
So where do you guys stand on just your interest level? Like when I obviously like pitched this idea to you guys and you were down for it, but in general, is this something that excites you from an artist? Like Edward was saying, well, they're unreleased for a reason and truly the best material would have made the album. They wouldn't just leave a number one hit sitting on the shelf.
When I was looking at the liner notes for Finally Enough Love and it says, you know, compilation produced by Madonna, it got me thinking about the assignment for your show. And yes, that is something that I've always wanted, but I want it to be done the same way where she compiles, curates, produces, and has Mike Dean come in and remaster everything so it sounds great. That's the only way that this is going to work. It with her stories behind it too, you know, because in the two other projects I just mentioned from the other artists, they have stories behind every track. And I think that's
same
something
with,
that
same
Madonna,
with Melissa Etheridge, like her reasons for why they didn't
include. Right,
like for Melissa Etheridge at the time it was because the songs were too blatantly gay.
Yeah, and I think that Madonna fans want to know where the songs came from, you know, maybe what we thought Each Time You Break My Heart was about is about people's perception of her as opposed to her singing it to someone. You know what I mean? These are the nuances that we want to know about.
Stefan, where do you stand on it?
For me, I would have much preferred to have had her package up unreleased tracks that I maybe know about or have heard. There's a scratchy demo that's on the internet that you can only get from YouTube and it doesn't sound too great. But, you know, mm-hmm. I would have much preferred to have had that. However, knowing that, you know, Warner Brothers is planning to re-release all of her albums at some point over the course of the next couple of years, and that with the re-release of each album, there will be bonus tracks and unreleased stuff that's coming along with that. So maybe that was why her camp was like, well, her movie's not ready yet. We're not ready to put out the re-releases of the albums yet. Let's just do the 50 number one dance tracks.
All right, shall we get into it? Now, what I did there, we each picked our top five unreleased tracks, and then I organized them by era. Let's first talk about truly the only song that the three of us felt was worthy of like perhaps being a hit from the 80s, recorded in 1986, written by Madonna and Stephen Bray, Each Time You Break My Heart. And yep. this song wound up going to an artist named Nick Kamen. And so this song officially was released. Like, why did you guys each choose this song?
Stefan, hit it.
Each Time You Break My Heart just sounds like such a quintessential 80s Madonna track. It would have fit perfectly on her True Blue album. It would have, you know, nestled right in there amongst Papa Don't Preach and Live to Tell. And it's a bop. And I love that Madonna's backing vocals still exist on the finished Nick Kamen track. So you can still sort of, her essence is there. But when I first heard the demo of her doing the lead vocals, I was thinking, why, Madonna? Why didn't this come out? It would have been so great.
And obviously all of these songs that we're talking about, we were able to listen to them because they've all leaked on YouTube. So somewhere or another, they leaked. And so all this material is out there for people to listen to.
I mean, come on. Stephen Bray and Madonna, the two of them, they're gold together. Yeah. You know, I mean, I could take a whole album with them together, and I would love if they would get together and do something new. But so I think that's sort of where it stems from, is having grown up hearing Madonna and Stephen Bray's productions that were produced, and then sort of having this gem get leaked, you know, late 90s or whenever, I think, and being like, oh my God, it's a new Stephen Bray Madonna collab.
Like, why did we need Love Makes the World Go Round?
Exactly.
We didn't need that song, and we also didn't need it to be performed at Live Aid when she could have just... She could have just done Where's the Party, you know what I'm saying? but, you know, we digress. I mean, when we saw Patrick Leonard perform Madonna's hits at Joe's Pub, he loved to perform Love Makes the World Go Round. He loved to talk about it. So it must have been a special song for them. It was going to be the first single at one point from True Blue.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, they had high hopes for that song, and the rest of the world did not think that.
I don't get it. How does a song almost be the first single and then it winds up not being a single at all? So another song from this era, who picked Don't You Know by Madonna?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so this was recorded in 1980 and eventually was released on Pre-Madonna, which was a Stephen Bray album. So I felt like the vocals, like her vocals just sound too far away.
I think it depends on which. There's a couple versions of Don't You Know floating around on YouTube, like different recordings of it or whatnot. Again, Stephen Bray and Madonna can do no wrong in my mind. And I had only like heard Don't You Know very recently, like within the last year. I don't know how I missed it on pre-Madonna, because Stephen Bray basically released a bunch of demos that he had been holding on from his time with Madonna back in 1997, around the time that she was doing the Evita album. She did not give him permission to do it, but he was able to do it anyway, because technically those were his songs. Yeah, I don't know. I think Don't You Know just seems like one of those like early fun Madonna bops that I would have loved to have had on her very first album. It's got a fun 80s beat. I'm a sucker for Madonna 80s songs. Mm-hmm. And it's his production is sort of really like deep, dark 80s. And
well, it has almost like a disco vibe to it. Almost, I was reading the YouTube comments and somebody made a good point that it's very clearly like transitioning from the disco sound of the 70s into the 80s dance sound. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's good. I mean, I know her voice sounds a little tinny, you know, she's still got that very early Madonna's like chipmunk sound to her, but I don't know. It's just, I think because of the rawness, you know, I guess it also sort of depends on when you hear an unreleased Madonna song. I think where you're at in your Madonna journey is what sort of slaps you in the face a bit more, you know? So maybe had I heard Don't You Know in the 80s, it wouldn't have affected me quite the way it did. But, you know, most recently, you know, after hearing Madame X and Madame X being so experimental and so far away from the Madonna of the 1980s, then hearing Don't You Know and being transported back so quickly, I was like, oh, thank God. I'm, you know, some Madonna dance floor 80s gold.
That is an amazing point. That makes complete sense. So my pick from this era is Supernatural. This is a song, this is from the Like a Prayer sessions. I think I probably discovered it on YouTube years and years ago. And then when Britney has this song called Lace and Leather, I think it's on the Circus album, I immediately thought, oh my God, they stole Supernatural from Madonna. That song, that random song I love. I was immediately able to pick it out. And if you guys should listen to Lace and Leather, it's probably just in my imagination. I'm sure they didn't steal the song, but I've just always loved this. For whatever reason, to me, it truly sounds like something that could have lived on like a prayer. It was originally released as the B-side to Cherish in 89.
I love Supernatural. I found it to be so cinematic and, you know, it was musically very, very akin to everything Patrick Leonard was doing in Like a Prayer. Thematically, not so much, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's hard to go from talking about your breakup and Dear Jesse and keeping it together in the family and Spanish Eyes.
But Supernatural has a spiritual take.
Well, it's about fucking a ghost.
Oh, is that what it's about?
Yes. It's about Madonna moves into a haunted house and she starts fucking the ghost. But, you know, she is worried about maybe getting pregnant and having a ghost baby.
That's I need to go back and listen to these lyrics.
Yeah, it's basically Madonna's, it's Madonna's Halloween song. And,
that is fucking nuts, what you just described.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
See, like, did we need Act of Contrition?
I think that was a, you know, starting a new tradition of having the one-off last song experiment.
The other song from this era that I do like, is, if you want another like a prayer session song that like does sound like of that time, is Angels with Dirty Faces. Now, this song, they needed to like, a lot of these songs, you really just need to like rework the chorus. I found that on most of these unreleased tracks, I like the verses and the bridge, but not the chorus. So I think if they just rewrote it, some of these songs like would have had a chance. That song has a good like top line melody.
Well, that's sort of one of the things that I love the most about an unreleased Madonna song is Madonna has prided herself on being so polished and put together through her entire career. You never really get to see in behind the curtain with her creative process. She doesn't really openly talk about it. I think there was only one time when she was doing the Ray of Light album where we got to see her in the studio recording. They showed, you know, on MTV, they showed her recording Skin from Ray of Light. But you never get to see her in the studio and what her creative process is like.
Yeah.
The thing I love about the unreleased demos is you sort of get to see that. So even if it's a song that she did release, where you're like, oh, here's a demo of, you know, Into the Groove, or here's a demo of Like a Prayer.
So you mean like the imperfections or things that need to clearly
be rewritten? You get to see where she started and how she took it and created something to become the final product. And I think a lot of the like later albums, you know, we have all of the Erotica with the Rain tapes, and we have, I mean, a bevy of Ray of Light, where you get to see songs that were on the album, but it's like so far removed from the polished published version, which is great. I love that.
Which song do you think had the biggest transformation from demo to album release?
Well, I know off the top of my head, one of the ones that I love the most is Erotica, because she had wrote, there's so many different versions of Erotica that she had sort of been workshopping. And I love that, you know, you got her You Thrill Me version of that, which was a demo version that didn't make it to the light of day. Mm-hmm. But then years later on the Confessions tour, she decides, you know what, I'm going to whip that out. And she just does the demo version, and it's polished and it's perfect and it's amazing. So I love when she sort of, you know, she remembers that that stuff's still out there, and if it suits her, she'll use it.
All right, moving on to the 90s, there's a song here called Love Won't Wait. And similar to Every Time You Break My Heart, this song went on to become a number one hit for Gary Barlow, who's from Take That. This was originally written by Madonna and Chet Pettibone for the Bedtime Stories sessions. All the music from the Bedtime Story sessions, I feel, really holds up, and any of that stuff could have been used like I love the Babyface song, I'll Be Gone. He also sings on that demo. So definitely look for that. I also really love the Tupac version of I'd Rather Be Your Lover. That's something to really look for, because obviously the final version has the amazing Michelle Ndegeocello.
Perfect. Yes.
Yes.
No, I agree with you, Jess. Love Won't Wait is one of the songs, and hopefully one day we'll get to see the other songs resurface. She did a small number of collaborations with Shep Pettibone for her next album after Erotica. None of them ended up on Bedtime Stories, but this song was actually realized and sold to or given to Gary Barlow from Take That, and it did really well in the UK. And I remember hearing it for the first time thinking, this is so Madonna. And, and I also love how a lot of Madonna songs go to male singers too.
It's incredible how many of her, how many checks she is cashing that other artists have sang.
Yeah.
I never realized it until like researching for this. Also in the 90s, Stefan, I think you chose this, La Petite, I don't know how do you pronounce this.
La Petite Jeune Fille.
It's so good.
Okay, so
I would have chosen it.
Explain the backstory for this song.
So La Petite Jeune Fille is obviously the little young girl, the pretty young girl. It's a song she wrote for the Ray of Light album sessions. It's basically a song to her daughter, Lourdes. I mean, one of the things I love, obviously, other than the fact that it's William Orbit produced, so it's got that like watery, mystical sound bubbling around. Her voice is so beautiful in this song. It's heavenly Madonna. And I cannot get enough of it. Like, that will have to be, I'm telling you, that will have to be one of the re-releases. When she re-releases the Ray of Light album, La Petite Jeune Fille will definitely get redone, at, like reproduced and mastered and put out. It has to. It's too good. But she probably didn't want to include it on the Ray of Light album, mostly because she had the other song, Little Star, that she wrote for Lourdes. Oh. And she probably didn't want to have two songs dedicated to Lourdes, you know, it would be like, what, another song to her daughter? And because the album was so dancey, she thought, let me put the sweeter, slower Little Star on here, and then La Petite Jeune Fille will just go, you know. I mean, God bless Madonna for having all of these wonderful outtakes that she just was like, I'm not going to use it. And whereas like somebody else would be like, this is my hit lead single, La Petite Jeune Fille, you know, and Madonna's just like, I'm going to throw it out.
Moving on to the 2000s, from the Confession Sessions, Triggering Your Senses.
Now, that's a good one.
This is another one where I feel that they would have to restructure the chorus. I felt like the verses were perfect. It's the chorus that is where the problem lies. And if they had just like kept working on it, I think there are a few songs on Confessions that like I don't totally love, and this could have been more palatable, I think, for me at least.
Yeah, Triggering Your Senses, I it's a song that kind of excites me, kind of frustrates me, because like, as Jess said, it's incomplete, you know, it doesn't feel like it really got fully realized. I kind of get lost in the chorus. It's not great, but the verses are good. So I definitely think it's something that they just hit a wall and they're like, all right, let's just shelve this because it's not going anywhere. You know, kind of like if you go back to Erotica, Goodbye to Innocence, you know, that's a song that, you know, has a final version, but it still feels like it was never fully fleshed out.
Liquid Love, which is from the Music Sessions with William Orbit, her voice is great on Liquid Love and sounds so of the time.
Yeah, no, it's funny that you bring that up because I actually can hear her voice from which era. I can tell you what voice corresponds to which era just by listening to a demo, too.
Depending on who's producing her, you can see who produces her a certain way. Like William Orbit loves to produce her voice in this gorgeous lower register. And so like La Petite Jeune Fille, Liquid Love, like those are his production. Whereas someone like Mirwais
can just fuck up her voice.
Yeah, he likes to just like make it scratchy, puts it all over the place.
Do you guys not like Mirwais?
Oh, I love him.
But oh, no, love him.
He takes liberties with Madonna's voice in ways that no other producer has. You know, he'll chop it and screw it and, you know, put it through filters, and she loves it.
If we flash forward, still in the 2000s, another song that we all loved is Across the Sky, written and produced by Justin Timberlake, Madonna, and Timbaland. One of you said that this sounds like, or maybe it's a later song called, another song called Animal from the same year, from the Hard Candy Sessions. One of you wrote that it sounds like Maneater by Nelly Furtado.
Animal has the same bounce as Maneater by Nelly Furtado. That's another song that has a great, great chorus, but the verse is weird because she's trying to, you know how sometimes Madonna tries to do too much lyrically? So in this one, she's just really trying to stick with the alliteration of I'm walking a dog, I'm a dominant master. And it's like, if she would have let go a little bit of that and not been so rigid, it would have been a bouncier pop song.
Mm-hmm.
The other song from the Hard Candy Sessions that we all loved is Across the Sky, still Justin Timberlake. Now, do you think either of these songs, none of these were as good as 4 minutes? Across the sky, across the sky, oh, across the sky, oh. I would have definitely lost some of those Pharrell songs. Like, I don't like She's Not Me, Spanish Lesson. And I actually have to say, in the song Incredible, I don't like that either. Those three are the three I would lose. Mm-hmm. And any of those others, again, if they had reworked them, polished them up, probably changed a few of the melodies.
Yeah, I just remember she really tried to make Spanish Lesson happen. She talked about it every time they interviewed her for Hard Candy. It showed up in Ugly Betty. And I'm like, stop it with this song. Nobody likes it.
Like, if she were to go and release these songs from the archive, do you see her pulling a Melissa Etheridge and actually re-recording them in 2022, 2023?
Normally, I would say no, she wouldn't re-record if they've already been recorded. Yeah. However, I have a feeling if there is some sort of stipulation in the Academy Awards rules and regulations for a new song,
she
would re-record it. So obviously Madonna's going to want to try and get as many Oscar nominations as possible for the biopic. Original songs for whatever,
even though she's not going to get any in reality, like, why would she think she's going to get an Oscar nomination?
She would get an Oscar nom possibly for best song. I think that's her biggest chance.
Yeah. I think at that, you're right. At that point in her career, if the movie makes money and it's successful, they might throw her a bone because she's older and they're like, she's been working and she's been in the Academy since the 80s. Just give it to her.
I have a feeling if she's going to do the biopic that you might see her use an old song that was written then, but it'll be a new production. So then it'll be eligible for an Oscar. So I think something like Warning Signs would be that, you know.
No, and Stefan has a good point. You know, as far as re-recording, you know, Madonna kind of like loosened her grip on control and re-recorded a lot of the Madame X tour for the tour film. I would always love to see her re-record one of her tracks, much the way that she re-recorded the remix for Don't Cry For Me Argentina, which is one of her best of all time.
Wait, do you want to hear the funniest thing? Yesterday, my instructor at Barry's boot camp played the dance remix of Don't Cry For Me Argentina in class. Yesterday.
It's the best.
A song that honestly was one of the pinnacles of my high school education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like I said, one of her best remixes, one of her best vocal performances. Nikki and Donna really turn it out. It's bilingual.
I didn't realize that she re-recorded that. Like, what do we know why they didn't just,
because the tempo was different. When you speed up Don't Cry For Me Argentina, it requires a different tempo. And she did the same thing for the Buenos Aires remixes as well. They went to Gloria and Emilio Estefan's studios in Miami and they re-recorded the remixes for Evita with Nikki and Donna.
Where are we with the movie? Like, I mean, obviously, like, Julia Garner is playing Madonna, but like,
well, it's not guaranteed yet. Apparently, the movie has not been greenlit. It's still being worked on. I think probably what's happening is they're waiting until Julia Garner is, her schedule's freed up. If they're going to start filming, they will start filming in the spring or summer of next year. Mm-hmm.
Do you think we will ever see this movie?
Yes.
You do?
But Yeah, no, by hook or by crook, Madonna is going to drag this movie across the finish line. I'm telling you, she wants to see this movie, mm-hmm. see the light of day, and I think she will make it happen eventually.
However, we will see a Whitney Houston biopic and a Cher biopic before Madonna's comes out. No, that's true. The Whitney one is coming out in December. Stanley Tucci is playing Clive Davis.
Oh, that's good casting.
I know. So I can't wait to see what they do with that one. And then the Cher one is in pre-production. So who knows, who are they going to get to play Cher, you know?
Even past the movie, like if it gets released or not, mm-hmm. what I'm craving more than anything is a theater tour, much like the Madame X tour, but like just do all your old shit. Strip down. I don't need to see you try and dance. Leave your body alone. People really just want to see you sing your songs. Even if it's all of her ballads, sing Take a Bow, sing all of those great, mm-hmm. You could do Frozen that way. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't get why she's so insistent on trying to dance at a certain level. Like, can't she just give that up? Like, why do nobody wants that? I mean, I don't need that from her.
Yeah, I don't need that either. I know that as a dancer, that's how she wants to express herself. Maybe she doesn't know how to perform a song without adding dance elements to it. But yeah, at some point, you know, like Stefan saw her in Harlem and she wasn't dancing and she was like a torch singer with Jean-Baptiste playing the piano. Who has it better than her? She can do that all over the world and sell out theaters and opera houses, you know?
What songs did she perform at the Harlem event?
There was, I believe it was four. So she did Dark Ballet. She did
La Isla Bonita.
La Isla Bonita. Well, and then of course we had the street parade to Like a Prayer that, you know, we were all marching on the streets of Harlem.
Yeah, you don't have to dance to Like a Prayer. She doesn't dance to Like a Prayer.
No one has ever danced. Well, they only in Blonde Ambition where they did that thing, you know?
Oh, so good.
where they flew across the floor in unison, you know? But after that, no one's ever danced to Like a Prayer and gotten away with it.
Let me ask each of you, what has your culture diet been lately? Like TV, or if there's music in particular that you've been loving, but like, has there been any? I've been like more into scripted lately. Like, what have you guys been listening to, watching?
I just finished reading, listening to Selma Blair's book, Mean Baby, and it just really threw me across the room. It's just so emotional, so funny. She's an amazing personality. I can't believe we didn't know more about her before. I mean, her work speaks for itself from, you know, the early 2000s, but I really love that. This is embarrassing, but not really. I accidentally started watching on HBO Max Pretty Little Liars Original Sin, and now I'm completely caught up. I mean, it's trashy, it's fun. I mean, it's like one of those nighttime teen soaps, but this time there's like bad words and full frontal nudity, so I'm like, sign me up. and I watched Bluestone Manor Ultimate Girls Trip, and I hate myself. I mean, I can't take a shower strong enough to wash that grime off of me.
Did you not like it?
Oh, I loved it, but it was I just felt filthy afterwards.
I don't even know what it is.
It's a housewives thing.
Yeah.
It would take hours to explain. You know what? Oh, my God. I forgot that the thing that I've been obsessed with is totally Madonna related. So
I was going to say, I'm surprised you didn't bring up the Lestastic version.
Oh, my God. Okay. This belongs at the front of this episode.
I haven't seen it yet. Please tell everyone, watch it or not watch it.
It is the greatest thing I have seen in quite some time.
Okay, I'm watching
it. Yeah, so for people who don't know, and like you should know, Abby Jacobson and Will Graham, who is her writing producing partner on this, they have made a television version of A League of Their Own, and it is the gayest thing I have seen.
I don't know.
Is it like an all-girl affair?
Yes.
It is basically like the L word, A League of Their Own.
I mean, they're not having like sex. I mean, you have to understand, right. Okay, like they're limited.
There's no
You can't say that.
No one has ever said that, Stefan.
You can't say that.
Now, do they talk about May? Do they talk about May?
No.
Okay.
The characters are different from the movie. It's not the same. They are still peaches.
Oh yeah, they're peaches. But don't you kind of get the vibe that Rosie's character and Madonna's character are represented in the movie? Like, if we are to believe that. If May, Madonna's character, had been gay, I feel like she would be mapped probably onto Darcy Carden's character of Greta.
Totally. Yeah. That's when I saw the two of them on the first scene that they're at in Chicago. I was like, that's
she wears the baseball hat the way Madonna does, like upright.
She's very bouffant, the hair, and she's dancing. Yeah, it's very.
And there's a scene in the pilot where they're like kind of like swing dancing the way mm-hmm. Madonna did in that iconic scene. And her best friend in the show is clearly like a Rosie stand-in.
Oh, totally.
Like the character is meant to be. And by the way, Rosie is a
character. Spoiler alert. I know. I was going to say, don't you spoil it for me. I haven't gotten to that episode.
Oh, okay.
Yet,
oh, it's actually the best. It's the best episode.
I know
episode.
That Rosie's in it. Yeah. I just don't know what she plays. So okay. Don't spoil it. Okay.
I just read a very short article in Vulture, and there is an article that has all the ways that the show evokes the movie mm-hmm. and point by point, and a lot of are the ones that you just brought up, and it's very interesting. Yeah, I look forward to watching it. I'm going to watch it this week.
I cannot. I guess we'll leave it there. Like, everyone needs to, like, run, don't walk to the A League of Their Own. Like, you will be satisfied. It's amazing. And actually, there's been a lot of press with this one person who was part of the Peaches, part of the team, Maybelle Blair. And she came out at the Tribeca Film Festival with Abby Jacobson. She came out on stage publicly for the first time at age 95.
Well, wow. It's about time.
And she was a consultant on the show. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's a lot. If you, like, look up interviews with her, and yeah. I've been obsessed.
Another good sideline is in April at the TCM Classic Movie Film Festival in LA, they did a reunion of some of the stars from League of Their Own, and it was Lori Petty. She was probably the bigger name
Anne
there.
Anne Ramsey was there. Ramsey from Mad About You and The L Word.
And The L Word.
Who was also in A League of Their Own. Yeah, she was.
Exactly.
There.
So watch that interview, and it's Lori Petty grandstanding, but you get a lot of like cool stories about Madonna in there as well.
Did you guys know that Carrie Fisher and Penny Marshall were together romantically for over 25 years, probably until each of them died?
What?
Okay, stop. I knew I knew that Carrie Fisher, when she was dating Dan Aykroyd and Penny Marshall was with Rob Reiner, they used to double date and go on vacations a lot and did acid together, but I didn't know that this turned into a romantic relationship. I couldn't be happier for both of them. Mazel
tov. God.
Well, they're both dead. But
Laverne and Leia? I had no idea.
Through a friend of a friend, I can't give like real details, but a very good friend was in the writer's room on A League of Their Own. And she said that Rosie would met with the writers and like just like hung out probably like while they were filming.
Yeah.
And she just regaled them with stories and she told them. So she heard this standing in front of Rosie O'Donnell.
Uh-huh.
So like it's real. Also, they're both dead. But she was like, are there any other like dead gay people you want to out? Because like we're here listening. But yeah, for anybody who made it to the end of this episode, DM me, letting me know if you heard that part. At the very end. That is our final thought. Boys, I love you.
Oh, we love you, Jess.
You're the best.
Always coming on your show, it feels like home, so let's find another topic to like talk to death.
We will. Tell everybody one more time the name of the show and how they can follow you guys on Instagram.
Sure. You can find MLVC The Madonna Podcast on Twitter and Instagram at MLVC Podcast. Go check out our YouTube channel for some fun little Madonna performances and a little roller skating video. And just the comments alone I don't delete any of the hatred, and people, I don't know what you're doing in your personal homes, but the comments are gold.
No, Stefan's right. The YouTube page has kind of taken off. It has a life of its own. I love it. It's a place where you could kind of land. You could, listen to a few clips from episodes, but then you can also like get lost in the comments and then, see some original footage from, Stefan's whirlwind Madonna appearance / junket /
junket.
Wherever she goes, Stefan is not far behind.
I try.
I'm upset. All right, boys, I love you, and we'll see you soon.